Do you want me to, like, just read it, or, like, if... Just read it plain?
You can react.
If I have reactions. Okay. Okay. So, whatever.
Yeah, so this is it.
This is the email. Okay.
This is Emily. She's a volunteer at the radio station I work for. A few months ago, I received a complaint from a listener, and I asked Emily to read it aloud.
I am uncertain to whom I should send this email, so I hope you will direct it to the appropriate woman. I rarely listen to your station, but when I was listening this morning, two women were talking about Woody Allen and Trainspotting. I really enjoyed the conversation they had, but it was difficult to piece together because one of them used the word like repeatedly. I was about to change stations when the other woman took over and she used the word repeatedly. I got fed up and changed stations. Between facts and opinion, both women were very interesting to listen to, but it was a waste of both my time and that of the other listeners to have to listen to the use of those two words. I'm sorry to say that they reminded me, like, two 16-year-old girls in conversation, like, with each the other, like, please help them.
You can hear from the tone in Emily's voice what she thinks of the complaint, but I'll let her say it in her own words.
It's pretty infuriating. Like, I just use those, like, those are two words that people just use. And especially, like, even, like, that's not one that is usually associated with, like, young women, but, like, getting mad at that in this context. I'm still trying to process it. What did they expect you to do?
I don't know. I think they expected me to pass on the critique and maybe tell the women to sound less like young women.
Right. Just like, it's wrong. How you use language in this world is wrong.
Yeah. It reminded me of this moment in the media a few years ago when young women were getting critiqued for a different vocal tic. You might remember it. It's called vocal fry. Wait, did you hear that? It's called vocal fry. Fry. I just did it. My name is Madeline Taylor, and you're listening to a special edition of Shoes on a Wire. This is Please Help Them, Vocal Fry and Other Epidemics. I hadn't really heard of vocal fry before, but when it started to have its media moment, I heard about it everywhere.
America's young women are running out of oxygen. What else could explain why so many of them sound like this?
So cute. Which is kind of like my, you know, motto.
Kim and Khloe just don't get it.
There's a scientific term for the way a Kardashian speaks, and it's vocal fry.
Linguists call it vocal fry, that throaty, crackly voice used by some of today's biggest pop culture stars.
It's a low, creaky vibration produced by a fluttering of the vocal cords. Speech pathologists call it a disorder. Call it a quirk, a trend, or an epidemic.
It's annoying. I mean, it's really annoying.
It can, according to some studies, cause cracks in the career paths of young women by making them sound less competent.
A recent study of women in college found that two-thirds of them use this glottalization.
Researchers have done a lot of studies on this, and they actually show that women with vocal fry are perceived as less competent and less hireable. Interesting. Carol Toliano.
Vocal fry. The vocal fry register, also known as pulse register, laryngealization, pulse phonation, creak, croak, popcorning, glottal fry, glottal rattle, glottal scrape, and stroll bass is the lowest vocal register and is produced through a loop.
It even got a moment on This American Life. If you're not familiar with This American Life, it's one of the most popular podcasts in the world with more than 2 million listeners on a weekly basis.
Vocal fry and reclaim your strong female. July 24th, 2015.
For a while now, the women on our staff have been getting emails like this one. A man wrote, quote, "Listen, I know there's pressure to hire females, in particular young females just out of college. And besides, they're likely to work for less money. But do you have to choose the most irritating voices in the English-speaking world? I mean, are you forced to? Or maybe, as I imagine, NPR runs national contests looking for them." What's striking in the dozens of emails about vocal fry that we've gotten here at our radio show is how vehement people are. These are some of the angriest emails we ever get. They call these women's voices unbearable, excruciating, annoyingly adolescent, beyond annoying, difficult to pay attention, so severe as to cause discomfort.
I noticed the way vocal fry is described. Disgusting. People outline what the sound is caused by, the sound that I make, and apparently two-thirds of American women make. And then there's also the newscasters saying that the sound causes women to sound less authoritative, less educated, less hireable, that it could damage their careers, that it makes their reporting, like on This American Life, sound less worthy of listening to. It became hard to differentiate between the actual sound of vocal fry and the stated effect of vocal fry, that it made women sound stupid and unprofessional. I wondered, what was actually wrong with vocal fry? Besides that it was quote-unquote annoying. The panic about vocal fry as an epidemic seemed similar to the problem people had with women using upspeak, or the Valley Girl accent from the 90s, or women having high-pitched voices, sounding shrill, saying like too much, or sounding too cutesy or girly. These were all vocal trends adopted by young women that seemed to make them sound less authoritative. Or was it that we were hearing them as less authoritative? I decided to ask some of the people in my life how this sort of criticism has affected them.
Hi, my name is Megan Devlin. I'm a Master of Journalism student. I just finished my degree here at UBC. I work at a couple of major media outlets. I guess you could say I'm an early career journalist.
My name is Sarah Jickling. I am a musician. I am a mental health activist who goes around to schools singing and talking about mental health. And I am a pole dancer. I'm adding that to my introduction now. I pole dance.
My name is Evangeline. I'm a writer, artist. I go by she. I identify as a bisexual queer woman living in Vancouver. And that's about it.
So my name's Candace Klein. I'm 31 years old. I am a aspiring historian and getting my master's at SFU in Burnaby. So I've been in academia for about 7 years.
My name is Aaliyah. I play in a band called Douse, and I use they, them, and she, her pronouns.
Yeah, so my name is Issa Arian Braithwaite. I'm from Washington, D.C. I'm 27. I moved here to Vancouver to go to graduate school. We came here from Cleveland, Ohio, and where I did my undergraduate at Ohio University, where I played football. Now I actually just got a new job. I work for this boutique brand management firm called The Sound. I don't know what else.
I wanted to talk to my friend Evangeline. She's an artist and writes about music in Vancouver. She knows more about punk rock than anyone I've ever met. Her hair is like gray slicks, and she almost always wears bright red lipstick. We were talking on my bed while my roommate had a party in the next room. She told me a story about her first boyfriend and a comment he made to her once.
I was 15, and we were all just talking, and he was like, "God, Evie, your voice is so annoying." And I was like, "What?" And he was commenting on how he was saying something about how, like, the way I talk, like, my voice is, like, he told me that I talk like a Valley Girl. Yeah, he's like, "You sound like you're from California." And I'm like, at 15, I didn't realize that was how normal teenagers talk, and I all of a sudden, I really, like, took that to heart, and I was like, "Oh no, my boyfriend thinks I'm stupid. I guess I better shut up so he doesn't think I'm stupid." And so I just kind of, like, kept my opinions to myself, and it was kind of weird, because I think he kind of liked it better that way, in a weird 15-year-old, we don't know what we're doing kind of way. But it's like those little things like that I definitely carried, and I found that I've consistently been very self-conscious of it. My family's also been very like this is how a woman is and this is how a man is, and I never really fit into the mold very well. And it made me very self-conscious, and I for years have struggled with being the kind of person who just stops talking. And it's actually something that I struggle with people who I date now, where I often go quiet and they don't really know what's wrong. And it's not that there's anything wrong, it's just that I am very I guess I am kind of insecure about the way I talk. And I find it comes out a lot more with more intimate relationships because I'm afraid that they're going to think I'm stupid, basically.
It struck me that a flippant comment from a first boyfriend would leave such a mark on Evangeline. In the time I've known her, she seemed incredibly confident. I was even really intimidated when we first met. That said, I would have been more surprised by her story had I not heard this from Megan only a week earlier. Megan just finished her master's in journalism and works at a national newspaper.
Yeah, pretty much this romantic partner. So it was about a year ago that this happened. He just told me that I said like too much. But he would be pretty rude about it. After he said it the first time, that kind of opened the floodgates. So sometimes I'd be talking or telling a story about my day or whatever. And he would just interrupt me and say, all I heard was like. And then maybe it was meant to be funny, but I just got really annoyed. Yeah, it just kind of made me feel anxious. Like, and he said specifically that, like, it was unprofessional and I need to stop saying it, especially if, yeah. And then I was in first year of journalism school at the time, and as someone who was applying for internships and stressing out about maybe getting a job interview, I just became really paranoid that what if I walk into an interview and all the interviewer heard was like. I feel like it would reflect that I was unintelligent, that maybe, yeah, I was vapid. People have said to me, Megan, when I first met you, I didn't know how smart you were. And I think that's just because of the way maybe I carry myself or the way I look. I think people think that I fit that Legally Blonde stereotype before she goes to law school.
It was interesting to hear how early women were criticized and what an impact it had on their self-confidence. But being treated like they weren't smart didn't stop with speech. Here's Aaliyah. She writes and plays in a band called Douse. We met in a coffee shop on Main Street in Vancouver.
Sometimes, you know, like I'll have an experience and I'll be like, okay, there's two ways of taking it. Like, one, like, that was sexist. Or the second one is, like, rationalizing, like, okay, was that actually, you know, maybe they were just doing it because of this or whatever. You know, there's two instances I'm thinking of in particular, and one was when I went into I went to buy, like, a guitar pedal, and I was with my bandmate, who's male, and he asked me that the employee there asked me, like, oh, do you know how to set this pedal up? And I was like, oh, yes, you know, like, and, you know, my bandmate was really, like, taken aback by that and was like, I've never been asked that. But, like, technically, like, if you think about the store, like, okay, well, maybe it's their policy to make sure you understand how to use a piece of gear, but there's still that bias and that assumption that, like, male people know what they're doing and female people don't, or, like, female presenting.
Every woman I speak to is used to worrying that they aren't being taken seriously because they often aren't being taken seriously. Now, I'm going to complicate this story a bit. Remember Issa from the beginning?
My name is Issa Arian Braithwaite.
He grew up in Washington, D.C., lived in a multicultural neighborhood, and attended private and public school before university. When I asked my friends if they had ever been criticized for the way they spoke, he had a lot to say about code switching.
Code switching, it's very, I think Barack Obama had in his book, The Audacity of Hope, he really dives into like what exactly it means. But basically, code switching is when you have to have like an interview voice, or you have to have a... just like you, like me and my friends, we call it like our white voice, you know, and or our telephone voice. It's just when you know that there are people who would judge you for speaking how you would normally speak. It's very interesting. I never actually formally understood when I have to do it. Like, no one told me, hey, you need to switch now. You know, this is the situation where you need to switch now. It is just like something that is just learned.
Of all the interviews I did, this one was the longest and most complicated. Issa spoke at length about how he has to adapt the way he expresses himself to be fully understood by white people.
When you get into situations like a job interview or even like an interview on the news, you know, you see it all the time. You know, when, remember that woman a few years ago? Yeah, she's like, Lord Jesus, there's a fire. Oh, yeah, you know, and they always put someone on the news like that. Mm-hmm. And it's to sensationalize and take advantage of that, of like the way that this person speaks. But like the information that they're conveying is the same. It's just funny to people, you know, like that. And people don't take it serious, you know, like that. And so like when you're not taken serious, It can be frustrating. And so that happens a lot to people, particularly, I mean, from my experience, like particularly to black people, like I understand that people are going to judge me based off of how I speak. And people are not only going to judge me, they're going to judge my thoughts. So even if I say something smart, if I don't say it in a way that's palatable to them, they're not going to understand it. It's something that you just always have to be conscious of, because you don't ever want someone to think you're stupid just based off of, not based off of your ideas, but based off of how they perceive you, your language. It's just something fascinating to me, because it's not like people don't know what it means. Like, you know, like, so thinking about like...
Which people?
Everybody knows.
Yeah.
Like, I could speak how I speak to my friends at home to you, and you would understand me.
I was a little unsure about how to include the conversation I had with Issa in this story. The need to code switch and the response people have to vocal trends like vocal fry and the Valley Girl accent are very similar. The concerns Issa talked about, being taken seriously, people thinking he was smart, were so related to the experiences I heard from the women I spoke to. Issa said something that really connected these phenomena for me.
Yeah, like, why isn't the word bro, that, like, slang for, like, white guys, like, nobody looks at slang for white guys and thinks that they're stupid. I mean, where my undergraduate school is, like, very heavy frat culture, right? So frat culture has their own language. And I was, like, I was in the frat, Pi Kappa Alpha. I was the only black person in the frat. It was, like, cool because we used each other, you know? they used me because I was cool and black, and I used them because we got to go into parties for free. But I was also able to do that because I grew up with people who were in frats. They weren't frats when we were in fifth grade, but, like, I knew them. So when we got to college, I've, like, grown up with these types of people my whole life. So I could switch. But, like, nobody polices them about their language, because when they speak to each other, who they're speaking to are the people who are going to be in these positions to put themselves in jobs and put themselves in other positions. So, like, their slang doesn't bother each other.
Because it's familiar.
And so, like, when it's familiar, they don't have to switch.
It's a fact that the majority of people who hold powerful jobs, governmental offices, and control money in this world are white men. If you are not a white man, you often have to adapt to be taken seriously because of things like racism and sexism. The ways women, people of color, LGBTQ folks, and others adapt themselves to fit into a world controlled by white men are all related. Issa code-switching. Evangeline and Megan avoiding saying like, Aaliyah not being taken seriously by a music store employee. These experiences are all based on not quite fitting into a norm. And what many people think of as normal are white men. Musician. She told me about discovering she has bipolar disorder and how it destroyed her band a few years ago. When we met, she was on her way to a Riverdale-themed party and dressed as Cheryl Blossom.
Skirt on, and I am wearing a necklace that says voila, and I have made this choker out of a necklace that my aunt gave me. Please do not tell my aunt. There was originally, like, a loon, and it was longer.
Here she is talking about becoming a mental health activist in schools. She worried she wouldn't have the same authority as the man she was replacing because of her voice.
So I kind of became the mental health musician. And so when a posting for an entertainer who has experience with mental health issues came up, it was sent to me by so many people. So I was given the job of performing with Reach Out Psychosis. And I talk about psychosis, but I also talk about overdosing and drugs and self-medication. And we do a whole show. I perform 3 songs with a band. And then afterwards, I get to speak to some of the kids and work through some of their issues with them and guide them to help. And this is exactly what I want to do.
How do you find that you carry yourself in those spaces where you're dealing with youth who are maybe they're experiencing mental health challenges, maybe they're not, but you have to present yourself as someone who's relatable to them while at the same time coming across as like an adult?
I was really worried about it at first because the guy who I'm replacing, I've known for a while. He's a bass player in the community who's now joined the band Mother Mother. He is covered in tattoos, has a full beard, stretcher earrings, and his voice is like Batman low. Like, it's so low. And so I was really scared that if I went up, usually I wear colorful clothes and I have what I have been told is a high-pitched or girly voice. If I went up there and told my story, that I wouldn't be taken seriously. I was really worried about that. I thought I have to dress differently. I have to lower my voice in order for these teenagers to respect me or whatever. But when I got to the actual first performance, I realized that it doesn't matter. And the most important thing is that I'm just myself, because there are kids who will respond to me being me. And so I haven't been changing my voice. I don't necessarily go there in my bright pink stuff, but I have been dressing the way I want to dress, and the kids have still been like responding really well. Two girls came up to me the other day and said I was adorable, and that's gonna happen. I was like, okay, I was just talking about overdosing up there, but sure, I'm adorable. But I took it positively.
Evangeline was told she had an attitude because she sounded too much like a man, and it led to an abusive relationship with her boss. Sarah, the musician and mental health activist you heard from before, spoke at length in our interview about being told she sounded too girly. She even has stories about being mocked by male customers at her various jobs. What's interesting is there doesn't appear to be a happy medium for how women should sound. Candace Klein is a Canadian historian who I went to school with. She's finishing her master's degree and applying to PhD programs. Candace has these stories about a guy in her undergrad who, again, would stop her ideas in class to tell her that she said like too much.
And so when we'd have seminars or things like that, I remember there was this one seminar I had for prairie history, and there was one particular douchebag, really, who would do odd things around my language and police it. And he even said, well, you use like and a lot, you know, like it was some kind of it somehow made me less intelligent than him. It was just a really frustrating experience to constantly have to like not only do all the work that I had to do for this class, which I enjoyed doing that work, but, you know, it's a lot of work, this one particular seminar. And so I had to do that work. Plus, I had to worry about pushing back against someone who was constantly critiquing not my work, but my style. And I thought that they were completely unqualified and quite frankly didn't have the intelligence to really, you know, back up what he was saying. I have to constantly fight for being considered intelligent or scholarly or worthy of engaging with. I'm very aware of sounding like a valley girl, mm-hmm. of upspeak, of that kind of thing. So when I actually engage with people in an academic setting, that's outside of social hour. That's in, you know, a classroom setting or an office. I absolutely make sure that my pitch stays the way it is right now.
And why?
Because it's that fear that I don't want to be considered stupid. I don't want to be thought of, oh, that's the stupid girl that's like, oh my God, all the time, even though that's how I like to speak to my friends, right? I absolutely put on a professional voice. Yeah.
And what do you think, like, what does professional mean? If we're going to parse professional, what are you trying to sound like?
Well, I'm trying to sound lower, right? So I want a lower tone. I absolutely want to make sure that it sounds like I'm enunciating everything correctly. I want the way that I speak to be devoid of my accent. I want it to be, you know, essentially this, I mean, essentially more masculine, right?
Language is camouflage. We use it to blend in when we want to be taken seriously, especially as women or people of color. Everyone wants the content of their ideas to be the focus, but often the way we sound is what people hear.
And I guess it's that like kind of chicken or egg question. Like, are young women annoying because they say like a lot and have vocal fry, or is saying like a lot and vocal fry annoying because young women speak that way? Who really knows?
It makes you wonder, if vocal fry is the current, quote-unquote, epidemic, and like is still annoying, and people of color still have to code switch, what will folks be criticized for next? I'd like to thank Evangeline Hogg, Candace Klein, Aaliyah Clark, Issa Arian Braithwaite, Megan Devlin, and Sarah Jickling for sharing their stories. Additional thanks to Sam Fenn for his editorial support. Music in this piece was by Sarah Jickling and Her Good Bad Luck and bensound.org. This project was produced for the CIVL mini doc series. My name is Madeline Taylor.